welcome back to the Divorce Solutions Podcast, everyone. I'm Jamie West from West Pro Mediation and Consulting, along with my co-host and co-producer, Tracy Miller from Miller Law and Mediation. Great to have you back, Tracy. How's it going?
It's great. I'm on holidays this week, so after I finish this conversation with you guys, I'm shutting off the laptop and I'm going back out to do something other than this.
Well, how lucky am I to have a lawyer answer my call while she's on vacation?
There you go.
It's amazing. And not only one lawyer, but two. Our guest today is Angelina Macri, and Angelina is a family law specialist and mediator who has a practice in downtown Toronto. And she helps to train mediators as well. And Angelina, it's great to have you on the show. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
We're going to talk about something that may have people's eyes glaze over a little bit. We're going to talk about net family property statements and equalization. And these are big, long words and phrases, and they're scary. And equalization doesn't apply to your 1970s stereo equipment. It applies to your money. And as soon as you say money, everybody's ears perk up and people get frightened and start to sweat. And we brought Angelina on board today because you do a lot of financial mediation and financial work within your practice. And I know, Tracy, you do as well. I guess maybe I'm projecting because I get sweaty when we start talking about the money and the calculations. But Angelina, you're here to say people shouldn't get too wound up when they've decided to separate, that math's math, and I'll let you take it from there. What should people be thinking about?
Well, first of all, when you're separating, what's yours is yours. What's theirs is theirs, both the good and the bad, the liabilities and the assets. What you're sharing is the appreciated value from the date of marriage to the date of separation. What does that mean? Well, if you and I, Jamie, go into business together and you have $100 in your pocket that you're going to invest, and 20 years later, we're dissolving this business called marriage. We have to figure out how to divide the profits. We don't have a written agreement, so it's going to be 50-50. Well, that means that we need to figure out what our assets are, what our liabilities are. How much did you invest? What did you bring into the business? You brought $100. So we get to carve that $100 out, put it aside. And let's say for whatever reason, all the profits are on my side of the ledger sheet. Well, I have to even that out. I have to make sure that you get your share of the profits. So that's all that you're trying to do with net family property, is to try and understand how much did each of you profit from the marriage. And then you share that profit so that you've shared equally, basically. That's at its basic what it is. There are some exceptions that don't follow that particular rule. And the matrimonial home is one of them. But generally speaking, that's how you figure out what your net family property is. It's by asking the question, what are the profits of the marriage?
Okay. The matrimonial home is usually the big one, right, in the minds
it
of
is.
Most people. So
it
talk
is.
About why that's treated specially.
Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, the legislature decided that women needed to be protected, predominantly women, and the major asset was the matrimonial home. So what they decided was that since most women didn't work, most women didn't have a lot of assets, that there not being any dowry or anything else being out there to protect the interests of these vulnerable people in society, that they would isolate the matrimonial home and have it treated differently. And you remember the example I gave you that if you invested $100 into the business, you get credit for that. Mm-hmm. So when we're trying to figure out what the profit is, if it's the matrimonial home, you get no credit. So if you own a house and you get married and you move into that house, and when you separate, you are still living in that house, then you don't get credit for having brought $100,000, $1 million of value into the marriage, which means that ultimately the matrimonial home, whatever it is worth on the date of separation, you're dividing that value up. So if, you know, you bought a $500,000 house 20 years ago and now it's worth $2.5 million, Well, you're sharing $2.5 million in value. The house is still yours. It's still in your name. But you're having to share all that value, right? So unlike the $100 in your pocket or the $100 that was in your bank account or the antique roadster that's worth $100,000 in your in your driveway, you get credit for all of those things that you bring into the marriage. The one thing you do not get credit for bringing into the marriage is the matrimonial home.
It's so problematic, right? It is just in so many cases, it's problematic. And here's where I get up on my soapbox about ADR, because to think that you could come into the marriage with 500 grand sitting in a GIC, and if you leave it in that GIC and you don't put it into the matrimonial home, you're going to get credit for it. But if you're the poor slob that brought the house in and it's still a matrimonial home, you're really getting screwed in the process, I think. And I realize the legislation, why it was created that way. But the thing I have found with a lot of people is the spouse will go, well, I know he came in with that value. So it doesn't seem fair to me that he's not going to get credit for at least part of it. Maybe not all of it, but part of it. So, you know, there are times when you have conversations with people and they go, when you explain it that way, and they will say, well, you know, I mean, I had a couple this year, two of them this year, where the one person came in and they had a few $100,000 when they came in. And we ended up working out, it wasn't in litigation, but through an ADR process. And they did get credit for a chunk of it, because it just leads to so, it's just very problematic, right? I think.
Yeah, and if you're lucky, you've got the dynamic where people are talking to each other about that and are trying to be fair. I had a case where it was a 5-year cohab, 3-year marriage. And this gentleman had used his life savings to buy a house, to rehab the house, to put every penny he had into this. The spouse put nothing into the house, didn't even pay for the ongoing expenses or anything else. Would not budge. Would not budge. Yeah. And then there's it became emotion. There's emotion. There's, you know, a lot of stomach lining and financial resources that went into trying to get past that, because the legal position is they're entitled to that value.
Yeah.
Then you have to prove why they're not.
Yeah.
You know, guys, it's such a it's interesting when I, you know, Angelina, when you point to the history of that legislation as it relates to the matrimonial home, it's absurd, really, nowadays. It's, you know, the basis under which that legislation was created is now the exception, not the rule. It was the rule back then, now it's the exception. It makes no sense, and it becomes such a lightning rod for conflict in the settlement of you know, a separation or divorce. I know every, you know, I've said this a million times. Legislators and legislation is never going to be able to keep pace with societies, the way society lives, but it needs to do a better job. That needs reforming. Would you guys agree with that? I'm putting you on the spot.
I agree with you. I think if you wanted to clear up some of the dockets that we have and the backlogs that we have in the legal system, pass a law saying that, like, remove the exception of the matrimonial home.
Because other than that, you get people standing on their head trying to figure out a way that you're not going to end up getting screwed, and what just seems patently unfair. And I've even had judges over the years throw up their hands and go, I don't know what you want me to do. I know it isn't, it's not fair. I can't do anything about it, right?
But law's not about fair, right? People think, I'm going to court. I want to get my justice. I want to be heard. I want a judge to look the other person in the eye and tell them that they are wrong, that I was right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right fighters.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're looking at, again, a lot of stomach lining, a lot of money, a lot of time, and you're not going to get that.
Yeah,
it's the Don Quixote.
The vindication isn't going to be there.
No,
and you know, and I was that litigant for a period of time in my 9-year odyssey, and I had lawyers like Tracy Miller saying to me, you know, I can't get you vindication. And then I had friends, good friends, wise friends, I might add. And this is another thing I would say to anybody listening to our podcast. If you've got good, solid friends around you that support you, by all means, lean on them a little bit. Don't lean on them for legal advice, but lean on them a little bit. And a friend said to me, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? And that was a good question to ask me, because I was really interested in the right piece, as Angelina and Tracy just pointed out. And then I decided, nah, I want to be happy. And once I decided that, things got a little easier for me as a litigant, and I settled down. I'm sure my legal people were very happy about that too.
Don't you think that the sort of the jumping off point for people, Angelina, is they need to sit down and get all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle in front of them in terms of assets and debts, right? Instead of trying to get positional or trying to be right or trying to find a hired gun who's going to get you every nickel you can possibly get.
Absolutely.
And sit down and look at it all. Don't start talking about property or money until you have all the pieces sitting there in front of you. And then I think most people will look at it. I don't know how many times I've had people say, I'm not looking to get every nickel. I'm not looking to leave him, you know, living on the street. Most people don't want that. I don't think anyway.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I think that the room to get creative on how you're going to solve things doesn't exist until you are clear on what you have and what you don't.
Absolutely.
Once you're clear about what you have, what you don't, where you are, then you can clear-headed, clear-eyed say, you know what? This isn't worth pursuing for me. Or this is worth more to them. Or I can live without this.
Yeah.
And you can make decisions that you are informed about and that you can live with. Because sometimes people go into litigation, and of the two people who are separating, divorcing, one is almost invariably, in my experience, not ready to be there.
Yeah, for sure.
And maybe they're feeling guilty. Maybe they're feeling victimized. They're not thinking clearly. They are in very much in an emotional space. And it's trying to get them out of that emotional space, which I'm not equipped or qualified to do. I'm not a therapist. I don't play one on TV.
What do you tell people? What do you tell people when they go, I just want this over with, and she's just delaying, and I want to mediate, and she's not even coming to the table, et cetera, et cetera? I tell them that.
I say, look, because usually the person who's got that attitude is the one that was thinking about divorce 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So.
And I tell, look, the other person needs some time to catch up to you.
Yeah. So you would think, based on what you said about, like, let's find out what we have here. Let's get everything out on the table. Let's find out what we have here. You would think that people would be, yeah, okay, that's great. But you've got a lot of people who don't want to disclose things.
Yeah.
Financial disclosure.
Fear.
What's that all
absolutely.
About?
It's misinformation. It's a lot of misinformation. It's a lack of knowledge. It's watching too much TV that's based on other legal systems.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say United States fast enough? And, you know, not taking the time to get informed, which is why I think that people who have fewer resources are less likely to reach out to professionals, which means that they're more likely to wind up in situations that have problems that should be before the Supreme Court of Canada. Whereas people with resources who take the time and the investment to reach out to professionals usually wind up with very easy problems to solve.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, take the example we were just talking about, the matrimonial home. A person comes and talks to me before they get married, and they know what the consequences are of getting married, having a property, living in the property, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, well, they're going to have a conversation about a prenup. Maybe they'll mediate a prenup. Maybe they'll negotiate a prenup. Maybe it'll be a prenup that's only about the one issue, just one, that the matrimonial home, that they get credit for the value they brought into the matrimonial home. When that person, 20 years later, if they decide that that marriage is done, for them, that one asset, that's the most valuable asset that they have probably, they've already decided. The person who brought it in gets credit. They agreed that it was a $1 million house when they got married. They get credit for the $1 million.
How clean is that? I mean, when people, if more people would do prenups or do any type of an agreement like that, you don't have to run into this, right? You got a clear cut roadmap of exactly what you came in with, and you're not going to get caught up in some crazy exception that, you know, you didn't even know existed.
Big believer in that, for sure.
But I don't know about you guys, but I find that personal finances are the last taboo of our society. It used to be you didn't show your ankles or your elbows. but today, you know, all of that is on display and more, but you don't talk to somebody about finances. And there's this myth that marriage is all about trust and romance, and it's measured by this blind trust. When the reality is that there's another side to marriage, and that's the business of marriage.
I was going to say, and it really is. It really is.
I mean, it's the most important business partnership you are going to go into in your lifetime, and hopefully it's the only one you go into, and it works. I wouldn't go into business with somebody without knowing what their role is, what my role is, what they're investing, what I'm investing. But we do that. We call it marriage.
That makes sense. So for people listening, Angelina, right now, what would you say? I'm kind of putting you on the spot. This is what I do when I have people on this podcast. Tracy will tell you that. And she's always slapping my wrist for it. But here we go again. I'll get slapped again. maybe Tracy will want to chime in on this. Top three things that people should be thinking about when it comes to financially settling matters even before they've come before a mediator or a lawyer or a judge.
Are you talking about before they get into a relationship?
I'm talking about the messy part where they haven't done the prenup and now they're at the end of the marriage and they're sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, I'm overwhelmed. What's going to happen with the bank accounts? What's going to happen with the house and the cars? And what are the top one or two or three things that a person should be thinking about when it comes to the financial end of their separation before they get down into the mud?
Top two, I would say, one, what do you want your life to look like post divorce and separation? What kind of lifestyle financially do you want to have? And two, is find out what you have. Start pulling your financial statements.
Inventory.
Do an inventory of what you have. To the extent that you have access to each other's information, like, just be real about it. You know, and the third thing then is decide how much of that you want to go to legal fees. Because, you know, if you want to have a lifestyle afterwards where, especially if there are kids, you have a decent relationship with this person. You have kids who are not part of the firing line. You have, you're able to afford what's important to you. Then you have come out roses, you know, at the end of the divorce. So to get there, you know, tip number three, go talk to an experienced family law lawyer, not your tax accountant, not your shoemaker, not your best friend. And not the internet, exactly. But go talk to an experienced lawyer who can tell you these are the challenges you're going to have. This is the lay of the land and what it looks like. And like Tracy and I said before, once you are informed, once you have an idea of where you are, you can then chart a map to where you want to be.
Makes sense. Tracy, you want to add anything to that?
Oh, I'm just going to jump in. I think one is disclosure. One is getting the pieces of the puzzle, and don't play games or try and hide crap or any of that nonsense. In the end, you're going to have to make disclosure, and it's just evidence of bad faith if you don't. So don't play those games. Mm-hmm. The second one is, this is the rest of your life, and it's also all your money, all your property, and everything. So patience is key here. When you hear the words out of your mouth saying, I just want to get this over with, you need to walk away from it and come back on another day. You don't do this in a hurry, right? And you don't. The other thing is, this is three, if you are doing this from a place of anger or vengeance or retribution, I think you're going to make a mistake. I think it's going to cost you a lot of money and a lot of heartache to do it. But you need to go and talk to somebody who's got some experience in family law, because everything you're going to find on the net and your best friend and all that have went through it, you're going to get information overload, a lot of misconceptions to what could probably be pretty straightforward.
Yeah. I'll give you an analogy that I share with clients. I'm Italian background, so a lot of my analogies have to do with food. Don't judge me.
Sorry with me.
You know, I tell them, look, you've heard of minestrone soup, right? You've had minestrone. I've had minestrone soup. Mm-hmm. I can give you my recipe for minestrone soup. And you know what? It's not going to taste the same, because you're going to put more carrots or more peas, or you're going to have like a different kind of onion. And a lot, like when you're dealing with the law, the facts are those vegetables. Mm-hmm. So finding out what your neighbor's minestrone soup tasted like isn't going to help you figure out what yours is going to taste like, because their facts are different. And maybe it's only different kind of peas. Maybe they used fresh peas instead of frozen peas, but it's one fact that could make a big difference. Yeah. So, you know, be careful. You want to get it. You want to talk to your friends. You want them to be there for you emotionally, not for information purposes.
No. No, not at all. And my minestrone will have way too much salt, and I will get yelled at by the people that are watching.
Too much red wine dumped into it. Yeah,
exactly. It'll be hopeless. It'll leave a very bad taste in everybody's mouth, and you don't want that. Tracy, I'm going to read our disclaimer here, and then I'm going to get to everybody's contact out there to our audience. This podcast is for information purposes only. This is not intended to provide you with legal, accounting, counseling, or therapeutic advice. Every case is different. You know, you need to get your advice, as we keep saying, from your own lawyer, accountant, and therapist who knows the particular facts of your particular situation. Angelina, how do people get a hold of you if they'd like to make contact and ask you a few questions?
You're welcome to go to either my webpage or send me an email. And if you reference this podcast in your subject line, I'll talk to you for about 30 minutes and figure out where you need to go from there.
That's so wonderful. Do you want to give out the URL or your email address?
Yeah. Email is amacri@macriLLB.com. So amacri@macriLLB.com.
Excellent. And Tracy, how do people get a hold of you? The teddy bear, I call her. Tracy Miller, everybody.
I just forgot to add, Jamie, I've had so many people come up to me and say that they listen to the podcast or they like it. And it would be so helpful for us if people could shoot either one of us an email saying, this is what I like, this is what was worthwhile to me, or if you have any new topics, please just email us directly. It'd be so helpful. But email is tracy@miller-law.ca. And it's Miller Law and Mediation on the net.
All right. And you can reach me anytime, jwest@westpromediation.com. And you'll find me all over Google and all the usual places. Tracy Miller, Angelina Macri, what a great discussion. I know we'll get you guys back together. We'll have Angelina back on our program from time to time. And this was a great chat. Appreciate it. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.